The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Are all people mentally ill?
I have no idea.
Is this the Dr. Ray?
I'm out of work. How do I find a job?
I don't know.
Boy, you hit the nail right on the head there.
Now, why would I say something so dumb?
I don't know.
Well, are you better than God?
No way.
Well, it makes sense from your perspective and your individual brain.
Great stuff, Dr. Ray. I'm glad I called.
I give you advice, and it doesn't work at all.
I think I'm going to have to change this channel. I'm sorry.
Oh, no!
It would just be the birds hearing you.
Hey, some people have said my advice is for the birds.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Reading minds all around the compass. In a single bound, across vast distances, over mountain ranges, through the desert. 2,000 miles away, I can bilocute. I don't bilocate, but I can bilocute. I can talk to St. Louis and Omaha at the same time. Thank you for joining me here. Doctor Is In. My producer man is Andrew Krucek over there in Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor co-produces this program with the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Back when I started this program, there couldn't have been more than 20 Catholic stations. Now we got, 400 plus domestically, and then around the world, and I think that includes Antarctica and the Marianas Trench, 500 plus, as well as Sirius Satellite Channel Radio. So, delighted to have you here. Very easy for you to get on this program. I had to scrape and grovel and beg, claw my way onto the air, but you simply call a number. Ain't fair. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. That is the number to call. You got a question or a comment about something. Something in your life, some situation, circumstance, person, place, thing, rock, paper, scissors. Whatever it might be. Now, I'm not going to do therapy here. I saved that for the office. And I certainly am not going to diagnose. I've never diagnosed anybody on the basis of a radio call. You can't do that. But we can talk a little bit, find out what's going on in your life, see if we can put our heads together. And I can say this, together we are probably smarter than maybe kids up to age 8. You get beyond that, they might be able to out-savvy us. But you, as the parent or grandparent or loving aunt or whomever is raising this child, don't let it be the algorithm. Still control everything. So you don't have to be smarter. You got the leverage. 877-573-7825. Now, I'm not sure I'll be able to go the whole show. Prior to the program, I was warming up. You can't just come on the air and start talking. So I was doing some lip stretches. Now, one thing about stretching, you got to be careful. If you're not warmed up, you can pull something. And I did. I was doing my lip stretches, and I might sound a little bit like I'm at the dentist. 877-573-7825. I would very much like to hear from you. Your calls make the show. And I'll do everything I can to give you an idea, a little piece, a bit, a nanoparticle of something helpful. Or even if it isn't helpful, like Andrew Krucek put together that brand new bumper, even if it isn't helpful, we can still make you feel better because you're thinking to yourself, this guy does this for a living, and he's no smarter about this than I am. So there you go. 877-57-EQUAL. I'll bet you do not know Newton's three laws of motion. I knew two of them. I didn't realize number two. Number one is a body at motion or at rest will tend to stay at motion or at rest unless acted upon by an outside force. Number two was, I had to look up. I had physics when I was in college, but I don't want to say how long ago that was, but I don't think Newton had really developed the laws of physics yet. I think he was a freshman when I was a senior. Force equals mass times acceleration, you know, so that's when you hit a ball with force, you got the bat, which is the mass, so sometimes if you're swinging a 36-ounce bat, it's not going to accelerate as fast as if you were swinging a 28-ounce bat. However, you got to decide what will give you the most force, the speed or the mass. And then the third one is, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. I want to talk about the first one and its relation to Lent. Let's just see how Gurindy's going to pull that one off. The law of inertia says body at motion or at rest will stay at motion or at rest unless acted upon by an outside force. If you have to exercise, then you know the hardest part of exercising is getting there. It's getting started. If I'm going to sit down and start to write a book or a chapter of the book, the hardest part by far is sitting down and getting started, getting over the initial inertia that you would rather stay at rest, if you will, until you get the body at motion. And then once you get to the exercise room, you're there. It's easier. Generally, it is. Come on. Or once I get started writing, I find, okay, all right, some thoughts are coming here. All right, it's happening. It isn't as tough. That's pretty much the way it is about anything. If you have to study or if you have to mow the lawn, whatever it is, it's getting over that initial hump. And once you do that, you got momentum. In Lent, let's say that you've decided, I am not going to complain for all of Lent. Or, I'm not going to brag or say anything that remotely puts a spotlight on me or anything about me. Or, I'm not going to say anything negative about someone else. So you pick something to get rid of, some aspect of your tendency, if you will. So you're trying to get over the hump, okay? You don't want to complain, but the hard part of not complaining is getting started, getting used to not complaining. And Lord help you if you find out that, oh my gosh, I don't have anything to talk about. I never realized how much of my conversation is complaining, because if I try to cut out complaining, I don't have anything to say. But here's where I think the momentum kicks in. Let's say that you've decided, I'm not going to complain. Easter rolls around and you've kept that pretty well. You've dramatically cut back on complaining. And you find that I felt a lot better not complaining. I noticed it. My mood was better. Or let's say that you've decided half hour of any kind of internet is my limit per day. Now, of course, weaning yourself, getting over the hump of cutting back from however many hours you've been on it is tough. But by the time Easter rolls around, you're sort of used to it. And more than that, you've noticed I like this. This is good. I seem to be in a better mood. I have more time for things that just seem more valuable. So what you did is you used Newton's first law of motion to get yourself started in Lent. I'm going to do this for Lent. I'm going to change this aspect of my life, my conduct, my personality. And as you go through that 40 plus days, you find not only has it gotten easier, but I like it. I thought this was going to be a sacrifice. It's not that much of a sacrifice. As a matter of fact, it's kind of good for me. And that carries you past Easter. So ponder Newton's first law of motion to get over the hump of getting rid of some habits that you don't like or kind of rule your existence. And you'll find that after Lent, a body in motion will tend to stay in motion. A mind in motion will tend to stay in motion. A personality in motion will tend to stay in motion. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. Dr. A.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jangle.
In the sixth rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, he instructs us to extend ourselves in some suitable way of doing penance, to assist us in changing ourselves and our response to the experience of spiritual desolation. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, "The penance is suitable when it counters the precise tendency to flight we feel in the spiritual desolation and permits us to act against the specific form of desolation we are undergoing. St. Ignatius is directing us to consider a suitable penance that will be an action that counters the very actions the desolation is pushing one towards. For example, if the lies of the enemy during spiritual desolation make a person feel far from God, a suitable way of doing penance could be an intentional turning to God in prayer and with trust. What suitable form of penance might you practice in spiritual desolation?"
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
Somebody asked me once, do I think my children were spoiled? Nah. Most kids smell that way. Thank you for joining me. Doctor is in. This is Dr. Ray. Max. That's a manly name. Max. From Texas. You got to figure a guy named Max is going to be from Texas. What's up, Max?
Hey, Dr. Ray. How are you?
Good, sir.
Excellent. So my question for you is, I'm in college, and I had a great conversation with a friend of mine recently, and the topic came up of if it's more, well, let me back up. I wanted to run this by you because you talk about the importance of selecting our language, or watching our language, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more, it could be more perhaps beneficial, it's succinct and to the point, if we as people against abortion call ourselves just anti-abortion. Because I wonder if saying pro-life can be, I don't know if misleading is the right word, but perhaps
it can,
a little
it can
too
be
general.
Argumentative. Somebody could argue it. So then why are you for the death penalty kind of thing?
Exactly. And I'm I am not for abortion at all, and I'm not trying to call Catholics hypocrites at all, definitely. I don't think it's hypocritical to be against abortion before the death penalty. But have you ever read Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life?
I haven't. I know Trent, but I haven't read his book. He's a bright guy.
Oh, it's great. It's an awesome book. But I think there's a section where he says it is kind of beneficial to try and get, quote-unquote, pro-choicers to admit, like, which specific choice are you arguing for?
Yes.
You're not arguing for a woman's right to choose, like, what kind of car she drives or her hairstyle.
Whether to put her seatbelt on or whether to wear a helmet when she's on a motorcycle or whether to have her little finger cut off if she doesn't like it.
Morbid, but yeah.
That's true. You can't go into a doctor and say, I don't like this little finger, cut it off. No doctor will cut it off. But you can say, I don't like this part growing in me that's genetically another person, take it out.
Yep.
So, right, it's incredibly, incredibly, immorality is illogical. But let's go back to your original question. Okay, so would it be better for us to narrow it down and say we're anti-abortion? We're anti, if you want to put it, killing a baby in a womb. You could say that. People don't like that. They do not like you saying killing. It just bothers them. You use the word killing, bothers them. Baby in a womb, you can't say that. You got to say abortion. Abortion's got this health tone to it. You know, it's like abortion. That's women's health care. They've been very successful in the language. And so the pro-lifers have tried to co-opt that strategy. Okay, we're not going to say we're anti. We're going to say we're for. I mean, who could not be for life? But then the argument comes, well, if you're for life, then what about the death penalty? Well, the problem with that kind of thinking is the church has always taught you don't take innocent life. Max, somebody breaks into your house and clearly is intending to hurt you or your loved ones, and you protect yourself with lethal force. Are you not pro-life? Did you kill an innocent life?
Nope.
Right. Or if you're in a war,
who was going to hurt my family?
Yeah. So to say, somebody can argue, well, if you're pro-life, then you don't do the death penalty. Well, wait, whoa, whoa. Then if you're going to say you're going to broaden pro-life that far, then you're going to have to say, I can't go to war, a just war. I can't do anything to protect someone in a war zone because that wouldn't be pro-life. They use it to argue is what they do. But I am no doubt in my mind there have been all kinds of surveys that said people's visceral reaction to using the term pro-life versus anti-abortion, the pro-life is the chosen word, if you will. And that's, I think, how it came about. So I would just use that.
Do you think it could be beneficial?
To go anti-abortion?
No, from the
I don't. No, because it makes it sound like I am against what you have chosen to do with your own body. When you say pro-life, you're also saying I'm protecting the life of that baby in the womb.
Yep.
So.
So you say saying anti-abortion is almost like playing by their language rules?
I think so. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, interesting.
Certainly. How could you be against something I choose to do with my own body? Who are you to tell me what I can do with my own body? Because it all comes down to the only choice here is what I do with my body. The baby is a non-entity in that language.
Yeah, that's how they think, isn't it?
My youngest daughter is pregnant. She's due any day. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Somebody came up to her and said, well, what if you found out that your baby had Down syndrome? And my daughter just looked at him and said, what are you asking? And they were saying, well, you wouldn't let it live, would you? And she just looked at him. And she said, excuse me? You're telling me I would kill my baby? Well, no, I'm not telling you. Yeah, okay. See, you back off immediately as soon as I describe what's actually happening here.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about that before. Just instead of being argumentative right back, just get them to clarify. Clarify what you mean. And as soon as they say that out loud, they realize how nuts it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most people think in fragments. Most people do not have good arguments for their stance. They don't. They argue in cliches. And if they followed any kind of reason or logic, which unfortunately many people don't, they follow emotion and self-interest, they couldn't maintain the stance they have. I asked a guy once, I said, well, when does it become a human then?
Well, we don't really know.
Okay. If we don't know, then how do you know you're not killing a human?
Well, it's legal.
So you're saying something that is legal is okay? Who made it legal? In certain countries, it's legal to cut off your hand if you steal. It's legal. Is that okay?
That's ridiculous.
Tell me about this. Help me out here. Yeah, they can't follow through. Max, thanks.
Yeah, everything the Nazis did was legal, too.
Well, sure was. Absolutely. No question it was legal.
Legal doesn't mean moral.
Legal. That's exactly right.
Unless it's God's law.
So, Max, you call anytime. You always ask great questions.
Thank you.
Take care, son. Bye. Oh, I got time. I'm going to have to probably take Kathy through the break, but I want to talk to Kathy about this because this is one of my main questions. I have an adoption book called Adoption, Could You, Should You, and Then What? And one of the big questions is, okay, how do we know? How do we know if adoption is something we should pursue? Do I got that right, Kathy?
You got it right, Dr. Ray.
Are yes, you with, my, you have children, other children?
No, unfortunately. My husband and I have been married 2 years. And about 6 months into our marriage, we found out that I am unable to have children. And we are not pursuing IVF or anything like that because I'm Catholic and I want to obey the church's rules. So we are trying to discern whether God wants us to pursue adoption or not. And it's hard. I've researched domestic, international, foster care adoption. If we did pursue it, we probably would go with international adoption, but we're trying to figure out if it's better just to use our energy and resources on simply loving the people that God has put into our lives rather than trying to adopt. And I really don't know which way to go.
Well, what exactly is the reluctance side of adoption?
I think our fears are that we would adopt and that the children we adopt would not turn out well.
Well, that can be. Sure, that can be. That's yeah. Legit.
Yeah.
Have you gotten scary stories from people who have adopted?
Yes. Yes, we know several families who did adopt and there were some medical issues like fetal alcohol syndrome. And so the parents find themselves in a position where they are continuing to have to parent long after the child has grown up. And that isn't really something that we would want. And then, of course, just with the crazy world right now, there's always the fear that any child we adopted would get pulled into some kind of bizarre, you know, the lies that the world presents. So that's another fear that we have.
In the adoption book that I wrote, the Could You, Should You, about half the book deals with where you're at, Kathy, which is,
okay.
I got these fears. I don't know how this kid's going to turn out. I don't know what kind of neglect he's lived through when he was in adoption in Eastern Europe. I don't know, when he was in an orphanage in Eastern Europe and he was neglected the first 4 years of his life, or I went down to Guatemala. And you got this 6-year-old down there that it was abandoned at age 3, and I don't know anything about before age 3, and what kind of brain development am I looking at, and am I going to have a 19-year-old that's totally unsocialized? Yeah, you can do that. And yeah. if you want to be perfectly secure, then you don't. Now, that said, stay there. Because don't leave me, Kathy. This is Dr. Ray, 877-57-EQUAL. Thank you so much for your questions and your calls. You spur me to think harder and to try to be a little more like, you know, I mean, articulate and stuff.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
Let us strive to know the Lord. Quick question to you and me right now. Is that what you and I are doing every single day? When you and I wake up every day, do we strive to know Jesus or not? In the Old Testament, in the same book of Hosea, a little bit later on, it's in chapter 14, the Lord says through the prophet, "My people perish." Or in another translation, "My people are being destroyed because of a lack of knowledge." Not a lack of data. We got tons of data. Not a lack of information. We got a lot of information. Not just about things that are happening in the world. We got a lot of data, a lot of knowledge, a lot of information about God. But not a lot of intimacy with God. Not a lot of relationship with God. Not a lot of friendship. That's the cry of God's heart. God wants to give himself to us in the incredible gift of friendship, and we're not taking advantage of it.
60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The first commandment, "I am the Lord your God. You shall have no strange gods before me." In this commandment, God seeks to protect us from false claims to our worship and obedience. And there's a great sad history of people who have trusted in gods other than him or things other than him and the ruin that it has caused. So God is trying to protect us and call us to an absolute trust and obedience of him. He asks us to trust him above all things and above all other people or so-called gods. We have to also avoid things like consulting horoscopes, palm reading, clairvoyance, recourse to mediums, any desire to try to control things apart from God. God simply says, "Trust me, I'm the Lord your God." The first commandment, "I am the Lord your God. You shall have no strange gods before me."
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
One full credit hour of a psychological education. Continuing ed. I'm Ray Grandy. Program's doctor is in. I'm talking to a delightful, sounds like she's a young married woman, been married 2 years, and has found out, similarly to what I found out, which is the doctor said, nope, no way, no how, you're not going to relax and conceive a child, it's not going to happen 4 years from now. That's exactly what they told me, Kathy. And so Kathy is looking at her future, and she is saying, well, we're weighing all this adoption stuff back and forth, and we're scared. I had one adoption worker tell me it was the fear factor. Kathy, you still there?
Yes, I am.
All right, honey. Well, you can reduce dramatically the chances of adopting a child who is more at risk. Now, it's not guaranteed. Okay, I've had several of my kids have been drug and alcohol exposed, and they're doing fine. They may not be academically rockets, but they're just decent human beings, which is what you want. Yeah. So, first of all, there's no guarantee it's going to be bad. That's it. Now, also, you can lower those chances. For example, a couple of my kids we adopted early on, and they were not drug and alcohol exposed. They were infants when we got them. And they were situations where birth mom decided, okay, I want to place my baby, and I'm going to look at these profiles, and this is what I want. So, and they do very, very well. Very, very well. Okay, they're good kids, young adults, doing great. So that said, you can lower the odds of having a difficult kid if you wait for a healthy infant.
Yeah.
You can do that. Now, it might take you longer. Could take several years, but you can do that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kath. Go ahead.
So even the thought of adopting a child that is very healthy, I think you're exactly right. The words fear factor perfectly describe the thoughts and feelings that we're having about, okay, but what if, you know? For you, when did you know, how did you know that this was God's will for you to adopt?
Well, I didn't know personally it was God's will for me. I read it. Mm-hmm. couple places in Scripture, in James, and this is faith that is pure before the Lord, that we take care of the widows and the orphans in their distress. And then when Jesus said, whoever welcomes a little child like this welcomes me. So I read it. So it wasn't a matter of, well, Lord, is that what you want me to do? Well, it is what he wants me to do. The question is, can I get away with not doing it? Yeah, he's not going to, what's the word I'm looking for? Condemn me because I don't do it. But if you look at it and you say, okay, that seems pretty clear. Now, my wife had an interesting observation when we got up to around 5 or 6. It was a pretty full family. I mean, we had 6 kids under 6. Wow. She said, Ray, if not us, who?
Yeah.
We have a good marriage. We knew what we were getting into. We knew. We went to the agencies and we said, okay, you got some tough-to-place kids, let us know. We knew it. We entered into the adoption with the idea that if this is a very bumpy ride, Kathy, I got a daughter in prison, okay? And she was very disturbed when we got her. She was psychotic. She's mentally ill, all kinds of things. So we knew that, but we said, no, we're going to give a home to these kids. And we'll bounce through the turbulence in the air. Fasten your seatbelt, please. We're heading into turbulence. We knew it. It wasn't a matter of, okay, gee, I'm going to have a great kid. It's a guarantee. This is going to be fun. I'll be a wonderful parent. No, not necessarily with all of them. Some of them was pretty bouncy.
Yeah.
But
it's almost like a ministry in a sense. But
well, a little bit, yeah. The choice is for you to say, look, I want to be a mommy. There's some kids that need homes. Now, you got several options, of course. You can foster to adopt. That'll guarantee you get a kid, all right? That'll just happen. It's going to happen. You can adopt sibling groups, you know, 2-3 kids. I've had many parents do that. Some of the kids turned out okay. Some of them struggled. So there's I guess I would summarize it by saying this, Kathy. You got no guarantees. And I know there are people sitting out there listening, Dr. Ray, tell her she has no guarantees even if she conceives and births. I know that. I got that part.
That's true. Yeah.
But Kathy's right. These are kids at more high risk, as in general, given their history, than they would if they were in Kathy's womb with all of her health, with all of her nutrition, with all of her prenatal care, all of that. Okay, she would be much more likely to give birth to a healthy, thriving, well put together neurological infant. Okay, that said, you can say to yourself, I can take the easy road. I mean, I can. I can just kind of say, well, all right, I won't risk anything. But I'll tell you this, Kathy, even my daughter in prison, as bouncy as it was with us with her, man, I was her guardian for years. She was in 5 or 6 group homes. She sabotaged all of them, okay? She's just a very, very disturbed young lady from almost the time we got her. So given that, would I do it over? Would I not do it? Oh, of course I'd do it. Of course. We gave her a home. We gave her love. We're the only ones who visit her. So given all that, you kind of like jump into the deep end of the pool and say, okay, Lord, here we go. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way you got to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I think that's the encouragement I need. I'll certainly pick up the book that you wrote. And
get it. It's on my website. You can go there. It's signed. It's at drray.com, and it'll answer a lot of your questions.
Okay.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
One other thing. I was reading in Purgatory Today, the June issue, that they said if you are instrumental in somebody taking care of a child, you get percentage credit. Yeah. Yeah, I read that.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Look it up. Look it up.
Well, I can use all the time off that I can get, so
there you
I
go.
Will.
And somebody asked me once, which kid do you love the most? And I said, well, that would have to be the kid that was hardest to raise. Because if love is a commitment and not a ushy-gushy warm feeling, then the effort that we put into raising the tough kid with all of the turbulence would have to be that, because that's what love is, to persevere.
Mm. Wow. Yeah.
Plus, you know what else? Here's the other thing I did. I kept my will in the kitchen on a dry erase board, so that if one of the kids came in and said, "Hey, Dad, I just got fired," well, I'd go up and I'd erase his name off the dry erase board. And then I'd say, "Well, you got to work your way back on there, son." Take care. See ya. This is Dr. Ray. Got some calls up there. Be patient. I'm coming to ya.
This is Life News Radio. I'm Jim Anderson. 40 Days for Life began Wednesday, the first day of Lent, in 661 cities across the U.S. and worldwide. Last year, 24 abortion facilities went out of business. This year, there is something for you to do wherever you live. Visit 40daysforlife.com. Bishop Michael Burbidge of Arlington, Virginia, is describing a recent Notre Dame University appointment as going against a core principle of justice that is central to Notre Dame's Catholic identity and mission. Bishop Burbidge says Susan Osterman's published articles present public and uncompromising support for abortion, disqualifying her for leadership at a Catholic university. Attorney Erin Hawley helped take down Roe v. Wade with her work at Alliance Defending Freedom. She and her husband, Senator Josh Hawley, each possess brilliant legal minds. She is now working at the latest name in conservative legal battles, Lex Politica. Rather than react to crises, they will seek to anticipate problems and provide solutions for other conservative persons and entities. The goal is to open the government and regulatory landscape for the success of efforts within causes like the right to life. This is Life News Radio. A Canadian man sought medical aid in dying, but was repeatedly rejected. He suffered vision loss, diabetes, and seasonal affective disorder, so he visited notorious BC doctor Ellen Wiebe. His parents only learned of his medical suicide several days later. Keanu Vafayan was 26. And abortion-friendly Oregon lawmakers have killed a bill to save those born alive during failed abortions by simply using the same standards used under more typical circumstances. For pro-life headlines delivered to your email address daily, sign up at lifenews.com. This has been Life News Radio.
Somebody asked me, what kind of people irk you? I think it's know-it-alls. You know, people that act like they're all sophisticated and everything. And they can't even cite one of Mozart's paintings. You know? Yeah, that's for sure. All right, let's go to Adam from Idaho. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Dr. A, how are you?
Nothing gaining on me. Old Satchel Paige used to say that when he came into the majors. Hey, Satchel, how are you? Nothing gaining on me.
That's good. That's good. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 17-year-old, and he's not our only child, but he's our oldest. And he's a great kid. He's got a full-time job, graduated school already. Great all around, helps out of the church, great kid. He completely ignores his small responsibilities that he has at home. We give him some chores to do, very minimal stuff, and he just completely ignores them. It's almost like, I feel like it's defiant, and I don't know if...
Well, it is. It's passive defiance. He's not in your face. He doesn't say, "I'm not doing it, Dad, get off my back." No, it's just kind of like, I'll blow you off.
Yeah, yeah, and he just doesn't do it. And we've had, I mean, this issue particularly worse with him than the rest of our kids, as far as just not wanting, he just doesn't do anything he doesn't want to do for a very long time. We've tried taking things away. He doesn't have much to take away anymore. We've tried paying him whenever he completes the tasks. He doesn't care about that. So we've resorted to charging him for when he doesn't do them. Like as a, well, if you're not doing them, then I have to, you know, analogously pay someone else to do them. So we've tried charging him for them. And
well, you're bouncing all over the place, Adam.
It doesn't seem to work, and that's why I'm calling.
Well, that
I don't
bouncing
know.
All over
I don't
the place
if this is
doesn't
just
work.
Him needing to,
my friend.
Okay, all right.
Bouncing. I call it pinball parenting in one of my books. We're going to try to find the key to motivate this kid, and so we do all kinds of stuff. But the problem with pinball parenting is you don't persevere with anything long enough.
Okay.
Okay. So there's several things you said here. You use your first five or six sentence to tell me what a great kid he is. That's good. All right, we got that. But you're talking to a shrink, so I tend to analyze what you say underneath what you didn't say. And there's a part of me that heard you not say, well, okay, he's a great kid in so many ways. I don't know. Is it? I mean, he should do his chores, but I don't know if that's that big a deal. So there's kind of a smidgen of reluctance in you being really firm about this. Am I wrong?
In fact, my wife tells me that maybe we're being too hard on him all the time because we're
there. You go.
Because
he's a good kid.
I'm very, very right.
Look at
I'm
all
very,
the great qualities he has. So he ignores his chores and doesn't help around the house. Yeah, tell that to his future employer. Okay.
You're right.
Now, you said another thing interesting. You said he ignores his responsibilities. Well, he can ignore them, but you don't have to allow him to ignore them. For example, does he drive?
He does.
Does he have a smartphone?
He does. It doesn't have its smart capabilities, but he does.
But he has a phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does mom wash his clothes?
Nope. He does his own laundry.
Huh? No, I'll skip that for now, but here's what I'm saying. Does he drive himself to school?
No, so he graduated already, but that's the only place we allow him to drive is to and from work.
Okay, so he can't go anywhere else?
Yeah. Nope.
All right, so what's he do, sit up in his room?
Yep.
Okay, you don't have to allow that, you know. What's he doing up there?
He's reading. Like, there's no gaming systems. There's no TV.
Right. You're on the right track.
Those capabilities.
You're on the right track, but I think you can tell him, you know, son, first of all, the chores are the key to whatever movement you have left. Those things have to be completed for you to even get to drive to work. Or you can tell him, if he's working, you can tell him, son, any day that you don't do your chores costs you $15. You can do that.
Yeah, well, that's what we've been doing for the past, I don't know, 3 months maybe or so.
Okay, and, raise it up.
And we have. Like last week, he had to pay us almost
$300. Oh, wow.
Yeah. We're charging him so much money. We feel terrible. It's just not clicking.
Well, no, but here's the problem. You do a lot for this young man. You love him. You give him a stable home. He's got a good family. And he's basically saying in high defiance, I'm not doing it. You can't make me do it. That's what he's saying, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you got a decision to make here, Adam. You can say, well, son, I don't want to take your money, but you leave me no choice. You leave me no choice. I will give it to your siblings who do the chores. What you're saying is, okay, I'm not going to drag you kicking and screaming to doing this, but it's going to cost you heavy. And if you want to live this way until you move out, son, what am I going to do? I'm asking you to do this, and you're saying no. You are flat out defiant. And I know you said it earlier, Adam. You said, well, my wife wonders if we're too hard on him. Well, he picks up on that. He knows that. He knows you guys aren't quite on the same page. And so it's like his attitude is, okay, I just, here's your money. Here's your money. And eventually mom's going to go, we got to do something else. This isn't working. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, that's what's happened.
Yeah, sure. So in essence, in some respects, you maybe trained him. Hold out. We'll try something else. But if you sit him down, say, son, look, here's the deal. I don't want to do this to you, but we're not asking much of you. And you're just flat out refusing to do it. So, yeah, it's going to cost you. It is going to cost you. And by the way, one other thing. You can't stay in your room anymore. You're going to have to come down. You're not going to hibernate in your room. Because what it sounds like his life is at this point is I go to work, I come back, I don't talk to you people, I go up in my room, and I don't have to do anything to associate with you or do anything like that. Am I wrong?
Effectively, I was kind of worried that he was maybe getting into something bad and having some emotional issues or something like that. But, I mean, for the most part, as long as we're not asking him to do anything, he'll hang out with the family and he'll play games and talk and things like that. It's just once we bring up him having to do something, that's when he goes and hibernate.
He can't you have to decide whether you're going to let him hibernate.
Yeah.
You can't run away because we asked you to do something. I suspect and again, he's 17. When's he going to be 18?
He'll be 18 this year.
I suspect that at some point he's going to say, you know what, I just want to live on my own because I don't like the fact that I'm being asked to do this. But he's going to find out when he lives on his own, he's going to have to do 20 times as much as you guys asked him to do.
Right. And that's kind of what I was thinking, too, is that this is just going to be a lesson he has to learn when he moves out. I didn't know if there was anything else really we could do or do anything different.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you're not letting him get away with it. You're charging him $15 a day. Okay? He chooses to take the $15 loss. Okay. There's my terms. You took them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I suspect that your wife is nervous about that.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I could see that. All right, my friend, you take good care. This is Dr. Ray.
Call now for great advice from Dr. Ray. Now, don't you feel better?
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
There is essentially one true priest, says the Catholic Catechism, and that is Jesus Christ. All others are his ministers. There is the common priesthood in which all of the baptized and confirmed faithful participate according to their vocation. Bishops and priests make up the ministerial priesthood, which is essentially at the service of the common or holy priesthood, the faithful. Jesus is the one unique mediator between God the Father and the faithful. With a single offering, he brought about salvation once and for all. Still, that sacrifice is made present through the celebration of the Mass. Christ is made present through the ministerial priesthood without diminishing the uniqueness of his own priesthood. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The devil will always do his best to tempt you into sin until you get to that place where you love sin. That's what he wants. He wants you down there with him. And not because he loves you, he hates you. When you do what the enemy tempts you to do, he does it out of pure hatred.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
It seems like in a situation with our previous caller, Adam, that I really would have wanted to explore it a lot further. It's interesting because it's like there's puzzle pieces missing. When you have a 17-year-old who's basically doing well in life, I mean, he loves the family, he probably does great at school, and there's just some aspect of don't ask me to do the slightest, don't ask me to empty the dishwasher. You got to look at what happened. What's the dynamic here? If dad's saying he's not defiant any other way, he's not disrespectful, he's not sneaky, we've caught him doing X, Y, and Z, he doesn't have an internet, he doesn't play vile video games. Okay, so there's something. It may be that he senses a difference between mom and dad. It may be that he's so stubborn he doesn't care. He could have the attitude of, I'm not doing it because you've been pushing on me to do it for too many years and I'm sick of it. That could be. It could be who he is. But the good news is, if he's a overall pretty decent kid and this is some aspect of his personality, which is confusing because it seems to go counter to everything else about his personality, then he's going to find out in real life. He's going to, or else he'll just live in a sloppy hovel. But it's interesting, and as a parent, sometimes you got to make a decision. If the child says, "I'm not doing this," and you say, "Here's my cost," and he says, "I'll take the cost," okay, there you go. Ken from Buffalo, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay, sir.
Just wanted to follow up. You were talking about the death penalty and abortion and pro-life. And I guess I've always had the position for many years that if we're pro-life and we're Catholic Christians, it's the big three, the abortion, death penalty, euthanasia. We should be pro-life in all those instances. And the last edition of the Catholic Catechism, they revised their position on the death penalty and have prohibited it in all cases. Previously, they had some exceptions, but now there's nothing. And I guess they finally came to their senses in saying that. But I think we have to be that way. If we are pro-life, you know, I know you mentioned wartime and self-defense. I guess those are different situations, you know, for taking a life. But the death penalty, abortion, euthanasia, you know, those are the big three. And we have to hold on to, as we're being pro-life Catholics, they're all the same. It's a life. And
I don't think there's necessarily a moral equivalence between a baby in a womb and the death penalty. And I don't think the church would teach that. Now, the church is against the death penalty. That's her current teaching. That's right. But to say those are equal, that taking a life at the end of life, or as Canada does, whenever somebody says, "I don't want to live anymore," and a baby in a womb, and equating that with the death penalty, I'm not sure the church would go quite that far. But they would probably, of course, say, all right, we don't need to use the death penalty anymore because we have other options. But I know what you're saying. You're saying we need to be across the board consistent. It's just a little bit tricky when you say pro-life, and that equally covers the death penalty, because somebody could raise the argument, well, then why will you kill somebody in a war? Why would you shoot somebody if they come into your house? Gets a little tricky. But I do thank you. What you're saying is to consistently follow the church. You're absolutely right, Ken. Thank you. This is Dr. Ray. Okay, getting real close here. Let me see if somebody just... Randy. Oh, that's my wife. She just texted me, and she laughed at an image. Okay. Well, I got to go. We don't have time to take any more calls. Nice stuff coming up. Forces me to ponder these issues for certain situations like Adam's, where there seems to be this perplexing aspect of this young man's personality, and it doesn't seem to fit with all the other things that look like he's a very contented, cooperative, for the most part, young man. I shouldn't have said, stop it, Raymond. If they were in my office, I would have a million questions on try to put this puzzle together. What is it? Now, I don't know if this would happen in Adam's case, but often it happens that there's something that comes out that makes the picture a little more clear. That said, thanks, Andrew Krucek, and thanks to you tomorrow. Look back Friday. I appreciate it so very much. The only walk you have that is permanent and is by far your best one, which is what you want, is your walk with God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.